And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy!
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds!
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
In today's episode of the Sixers Beat, Rich and I talk about our takeaways from the Doc Rivers press conference, what it could look like when he builds out the rest of his coaching staff, and the imprint he can have on the Sixers' two young stars. Enjoy the podcast. All right, welcome everybody. This is Derek Bodner, joined by Rich Hoffman on the Sixers Beat, a part of the Athletics Podcast Network. You know, I guess because we're so bad at doing this, a couple of housekeeping notes. First of all, if you could, head on over to your podcast app of choice, but iTunes would be spectacular. Leave us a rating and a review. I'm not going to tell you to leave a five-star rating, but we do like the five-star ratings. And also, if you're not an Athletics subscriber, head on over to theathletic.com/SixersBeat. I think the $1 promotion is still going. Is that?
It's still going.
Yep. Okay. $1 a month. It's the lowest it's ever been.
What are you doing?
We had 1 million people subscribe before it was $1 a month. Like most of them are paying $60 a year. You can get it for 12 right now. It's a special discount.
How is it not 2 million already? I don't have any data on our subscriber analytics, but you know, $1.
Go make it 1,000,001. We would really appreciate it. And we also think you will enjoy it as well. I guess we have to start this off with Joel and Anna. We recorded our last podcast right before they announced that they had a child, Arthur. So we had to sort of add that in at the beginning. And then now, right before we go to record, news breaks that their dog, Klaus, tragically passed away after an accident in an elevator, which it is, you know, I lost a cat like 2 years ago, and it's still every now and then it just stings. Like, that is family. My heart certainly goes out to Anna and Joel. It's so young. Like I think he got that dog like a little over a year ago. The way it happened, it's just a tragic circumstance. So I really feel for them right now. It's tough. It's tough.
Yeah, it's brutal.
And some of the pictures the funny thing behind the scenes, Joel seems like he's a real softy. And some of the pictures they posted on Instagram, it is real tough time for them, I'm sure. It's devastating. So starting the pot off on a sour note.
Yeah, and one other sour note too. Shout out to Serena Winters.
Yeah.
It's not easy to come in from out of town. We're a very parochial, local place.
And also not easy to replace Molly, who is pretty well liked here among Sixers fans.
Very popular as
for good
well.
Reason too.
Yeah, and to do what she did, which is, you know, I think she got hired right before two seasons ago. Like, she did not have much of a runway, and she seamlessly stepped into her role and she killed it. Very versatile. She did some writing and stuff for the website. There were a few times when. Probably more than a few times, she came up with stories where I read it and was like, damn, I'm mad I didn't think about that. And most importantly, I don't have anybody on the beat to talk golf with now.
Well, you're certainly not getting that out of me.
Maybe Doc Rivers. He likes golf, actually.
Yeah, no, he does. He does.
Me and Doc can be the golf guys together, and that's all I'll ask him about. I'm sure The Athletic would love that. But yeah, I would just say, like, Serena did a great job, and it's just unfortunate that that's happened a lot at that company. And
a lot. Yeah, no, Serena is...
And it's not a reflection on her work, which
was excellent. Oh, no, I mean, they cut sideline reporters, like, period, like, across the board, which is just mind-boggling.
For a local team, too. Like, sometimes I think for, you know, these big national games, there are, like, three sideline reporters. And I'm not even talking about basketball at this point. Like, football, sometimes that can be a little tedious, but I don't know, like, for like a local team, it's nice to have the sideline reporter who travels with the team and gets the walk-off interview after somebody plays, you know, a great game. And in Serena's case, like, when you get Embiid after an awesome game and he's wound up. You know, that's, I don't know what they're going to do anymore, but man, that's going to be a loss if that element is not a part of the Sixers anymore, because it happens, I don't know, 5-6 times a year at least.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, you run into some sideline reporters, some people on TV in general who you can just tell they don't know the game. Serena really, like, that's one thing I really got being around her. I got a couple things. First of all, she really knows the game. She really loves the game. She is just one of the nicest people. And quite frankly, there are some grumps on the beat. She is one of the nicest people on the beat and one of the hardest workers, too. And like you said, she really showed her diversity. But I'm looking forward to Serena getting to a company that knows what the hell they're doing, if I'm being completely honest.
Yeah, and she should. I mean, that one of the other things I took is that she's very popular around the NBA. It's not like she started in Philadelphia. So I'm sure she will land on her feet.
All right, basketball. We had Doc Rivers press conference this past week. I guess that was Monday, if my math is correct.
It is. Good job by you.
Not that it's math, but like my time is weird in 2020. I guess we'll just start off with sort of what your initial impressions were, what your major takeaways were, and how much of that you really think matters.
I thought it was kind of boring, to be honest. Didn't really say anything that interesting. And it seemed like that was by design. Would you agree with that?
Oh, sure. You expect that a guy who's been in the NBA 21 years will not give you a whole lot. He will talk a lot without saying much. Sort of like, were you on the beat during Doug Collins' era?
No.
Doug Collins was, well, I mean, Doug, if you got him going, he could tell you something too. But he would talk and filibuster for a long time, and you'd look up and it would be a 6-minute answer, and he didn't actually give you any usable quotes. That is a coach who has been around knows how to do that.
Not answering the question. Where have I seen that this week, too? Did you know that Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons have played together? When they've played together, they've won 65% of their games?
Yep.
Not 64, not 66, 65. And that was part of the Doc experience the other day. I would say with any of the questions about, like, Ben's shooting, what are people's roles going to be? He basically was like, I've only been here for a day or two, and it's a little hard for me to figure that out now. So in some ways, I thought when he was answering those questions, he's got an actual opinion on a lot of these things.
Oh, of course. He didn't go into his interview with, you know, Josh Harris and Elton Brand, and they're like, hey, how do you plan on using Josh Richardson? And he's like, I don't know. I just got here.
Give me a 5-year deal, and I'll tell you.
Right. That's not how the interview process works.
But to be fair, you know,
you don't want to say that to the media. I get it.
Yeah, and with specific roles, like, he's only been here a few days, too.
And you want to communicate that to the players first. And there's a lot. Yeah,
there's certainly, you know, practice time and things might change his priors a little bit, I would say. There wasn't a ton there, I would say. Like, he talked about sacrifice. He had a somewhat interesting answer on what the front office dynamic is going to be like. And honestly, reading it back, it might not have been an interesting answer if the Sixers weren't the weirdest front office situation in the league. You know, this idea that we're going to work together. But, you know, with the circumstances of Doc having a lot of personnel power in the past and just generally having a lot of juice around the league, and the Sixers, you know, Elton finally taking over this year, that's something that's going to be, it's going to be parsed. I guess, I don't really know. I'm not doing too well right now. I don't have a ton that's like, wow, he really like won the press conference or anything like that. Nor do you have to. I don't think that's necessarily important, but he also didn't really offer a lot.
Yeah.
I can get into some dumb things he said that I thought like were, and when I say dumb, I mean just like trivial, unimportant, and me being dumb.
Like, I was going to say, that's one hell of a way to start.
I think he's smart. I'm talking about just me laughing at dumb stuff. He talked about wanting to get into the top 7 in offense. I don't know if this was during the press conference, or I listened to something on the Sixers.com, and he said, I think we were 19th last year in offense. And I'm thinking, like, they weren't that bad in offense.
No, I was
they're 14th. So I looked up their total points per game, and they were 20th. And so my big takeaway from this is Doc a points per game guy? Has Elton's war on analytics already set in? That's my big takeaway. No, it's the, I think like he did kind of lay out, okay, everybody's going to need to buy in. Everybody's going to need to sacrifice, which is something I wrote about a little bit this week. The problem is he can say that now and it sounds good. And it sounds like, okay, this is the guy who's going to lead the team. But you actually have to show that you could do it with this group. And that can't happen until they actually start playing games.
So I guess going back to your comment on the front office, you know, he was asked about working with Elton and he said, we'll work together. That's one of the things that was so exciting about this job, to have that opportunity with Elton. I think we have a chance to build something great here, not just on the court. I actually think it starts off the court and we have to get that part right. So that's exciting. I think Elton and I will have a chance to form an amazing partnership together and we'll grow from there. That was certainly not what I think I was expecting as an answer, if I'm being completely honest, you know, because there were numerous reporters reporting that Doc would not have a front office title. And he doesn't have a front office title, but that certainly indicates he is more involved than a typical coach would be, which you sort of get because Elton is probably a little less involved than a typical GM would be. And also Doc has that history of, you know, of having control. And he really, for those couple of years there with the Clippers, he did have finals say, like he had control. So that will be interesting to watch out. You know, we then, of course, had reporting from your own Weitzman, the host of Weitzman Can't Jump, which is one of my favorite podcast titles. It is, he said basically the Sixers were starting to interview candidates to work underneath Elton. So we'll see. You know, that sort of front office change, it seems like they went coach first and then front office changes. I don't want to say restructuring because it doesn't seem like it's going to be that deep. But that was an interesting takeaway for sure. And a pretty boring press conference. And the problem with, I've said it before, I freaking hate these Zoom calls. It is, that was like halfway through the press conference. It's impossible for me to ask a follow-up. It's impossible for you to ask a follow-up. Basically, when he says that, there are 15 hands already raised in Zoom. So even if you raise your hand, you're not going to get called because those 15 who already have their hands raised, they're not going to get through all them anyway. So if you hear something interesting, you can't then follow up on it. And we never really got a great chance to follow up on it. But that was interesting for sure.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
That's funny. Yeah, Elton did the introduction, and then it was all Doc the rest of the way. You think Elton was, like, he was home by the time that press conference ended, like, just got in his car and got the hell out of there? You know what's funny about Elton and Doc? I'm surprised that there isn't any prior relationship there.
Yeah.
Just for two guys who had been in the league for such a long time that overlapped, they really didn't know each other that well.
When was the Philly special?
2017, 2018.
No. I'm sorry. I'm talking Elton's Philly Max. Philly Max.
Yeah, 2008.
Okay. Yeah. So he was well before Doc. Doc was winning a championship in Boston at that point.
They coached. I mean, Doc coached against Elton, you know, in Boston when Elton was on those Sixers teams, and certainly in a playoff series, the Uncut Gems playoff series. Now.
Yeah.
But yeah, they didn't really have much of a relationship. So that's, you know, I mean, it's, look, it's early days. We don't know, you know, what's going to go on, what ultimately happens under Elton. But I would imagine that Doc, he'll have more of a voice, I would say, than the normal coach. And that's, that'll be interesting because his track record picking players has not been good.
No. And it's too much.
What do you think about Doc as a coach developing players? Because that's something doesn't really have a very strong track record of. If you go back to the 2008 title team, Rondo and Perkins were both very young as starters. But to be fair, like the other three guys were pretty good at that point. Do you think, like, you know, he was asked about Thybulle and Milton, and he obviously said nice things about both of them. I wonder a little bit, though, like, if those two guys are here and they're not used as part of a trade in the offseason, do we trust, like, Doc Rivers to develop them moving forward? Because I'm not sure there's a lot in his resume that says that, like, he's the guy who cares about that a lot.
No, there's not. I mean, there's specific, one of them, oddly, his son. His son got better while playing.
He's like the only one on the Clippers that was under like 27.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the good things is the Sixers have so little depth, he kind of has to play Shake and Matisse. Is that, can I classify that as a good one? Like, he can't get out of playing young players? No, I mean, look, he's a veteran coach, a veterans coach. Especially when you're talking about a team winning. I think this is probably going to be one of the areas that people are going to be frustrated with him by. But I think right now the Sixers are so committed to Matisse and Shake, not just because Matisse and Shake are unique, but they are certainly on this roster. They're unique. Matisse is unique across the league, but also because they're so young, so cheap, and role players, they would be hard to replace with comparable veterans that you just don't have the flexibility to get him. So I think he's going to have to play them. I don't think he's going to cut back their minutes drastically. But yeah, there's not a whole lot to point to in his Clippers days that would give you a whole lot of confidence in terms of player development, for sure.
Matisse is the one that worries me.
Yeah.
I think he's going to play Shake.
He will drive him crazy sometimes.
Yeah, and I think Doc might default to offense in some cases. I mean, that's not completely fair. Like, he had Luke and Bob Mute for a while in Los Angeles, but I don't know. I was talking to Jamal Crawford this week, Lou Williams, Montrez. Seems like he defaults more to offense. And to be fair, you know, I'm a little more worried about Matisse because he's one that you need patience with. Like, he does, I guess, some crazy stuff on the defensive end, and he's not always the most consistent offensive player. And, you know, I think that might just be a problem in general for any coach to deal with. Like, Brett pulled the plug on him in that playoff series pretty quick when that became apparent. But I'd be a little worried about that. But to be fair, like, it's like you said, you know, when you look at the Sixers tax bill, they better get something out of those guys because they need cheap contributors for the next few years.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, they're in a tough spot. They really do need Matisse and Shake. They need their contributions. Shake, I think, is consistent enough both in his mindset and what he brings that I think he will be okay. I think you're probably right in that Matisse is probably the one that you worry about a little bit there. We'll see, though. Like, yeah. I think Matisse is also unique enough that, like, I really don't think he's going to fall out of the rotation. It's just if you're expecting Matisse to maybe make that jump and become that net, like the starting solution if Josh Richardson leaves, that's where I would be a little bit concerned. But I would also be concerned about Matisse making that jump, regardless of his coach.
Let's talk about sacrifice a little bit, because that was one of the main themes, and I wrote about that this week. It kind of goes back to what I said about Jimmy and Boston lighting it up in these playoffs, that I hope, you know, whenever they're working out this offseason, obviously, like you said, Joel is dealing with real life stuff. But like whenever he's working out this season, how these playoffs have gone, like, are pretty frustrating to those two guys. Pissed them off a little bit. Because the idea of sacrifice that Doc was talking about in Boston, to me, it was just so much different. It was more just, hey guys, can each of you take 4 or 5 less shots per game? And it's not like, hey, get in better shape and get over your fear of shooting jump shots.
Yeah.
And the other thing too is that those Boston guys were at different points of their careers. They were a little bit older. I mean, I don't want to say they were ancient.
They were pretty significantly older, I think.
They were all around, what, 30?
Yeah.
And Embiid's, what, 26, 27? Ben's 24, 25?
24.
Yeah, something like that. I forget ages now, whatever. They're a little younger. And they've probably done a little more consistent winning than all three of those guys, so the desperation factor might not be the same. But you would just hope that, like, coming into this, last season went poorly enough where they said, okay, we're willing to listen to this guy because he's done it. He's done a similar type of project before. And while it's a little bit different, I'm just curious if they're at the stage of their careers to fully buy in.
Yeah. 26, 24. Ben just turned 24. Yeah. It is, like you said, I think the challenges with Boston and with Philadelphia will be different. Getting Joel to really focus on his diet is different than asking Kevin Garnett to take a couple fewer shots when Kevin Garnett probably wanted to take fewer shots anyway.
He did, yeah.
Getting Ben to shoot is vastly different than really anything he's probably ever had to deal with in his career. So, yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's the exact opposite. It's take less shots, and now it's take more shots.
Right, take a shot. Yeah, I mean, it is. We'll see. I mean, it's. I'm a little skeptical whether or not coaching is the biggest drawback in terms of, or the biggest hindrance in terms of Ben shooting. I don't think. I think expecting any coach to walk in and just fix Ben in terms of being confident in taking that shot, I think it's probably a little bit unrealistic. If he gets over this and gets over sort of his mental hurdle and his comfort zone, then I think that will be largely on him. And I will give him a lot of credit for that. I don't think it would be just a new voice. I don't know. We'll see. But it's tough for me to tell you I have confidence right now. And it's tough for me to tell you that I think Doc is going to change that materially. So we'll see.
You know what I'm sick of? And unfortunately, I'm going to be a little bit of an ageist here, because it tends to come from our older media colleagues. Stop saying all he needs is like a 12 or a 15 footer.
Oh, yeah, that does nothing.
It does jack shit.
Now, look, if you're going to tell me, like, especially for a pull-up shot, like, if you're going to tell me at first the pull-up game is going to be a 15 footer, it'll be a 17 footer, then it'll be a 20 footer, and then it'll be a pull-up three, that I can get behind.
Yeah, fine.
Like, I'll take a mid-range 15-foot pull-up shot just because it's a step in the direction of where you want to eventually go. But like a 15-foot catch and shoot shot, like that's does nothing. That doesn't even really space the floor.
No, the dunker spot is almost 15 feet away from the basket. It is 12 feet away from the basket. So, what are we doing there? It's not helpful. He does need to shoot threes eventually, and if he ends up being like a Dirk Nowitzki, maybe even like a Jimmy Butler level mid-range shooter, okay. But he's so far from that. I'd rather him try and get decent at the thing that gives you an extra point. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Like, can you be passable at that? Because that's a much bigger difference, both in terms of spacing and the old point value you get for those shots.
He is going to be a low percentage, low usage scorer, low usage shooter, jump shooter specifically. You do not want your low usage players taking mid-range jumpers. Like, that will never be a steady diet of his. He already takes too many floaters anyway. You don't want to throw in a steady diet of mid-rangers, too.
It's unbelievable. Like, the people are, well, do hook shots and things like that. No,
no,
no, don't
please
do that.
Don't.
Yeah. He's terrible at that. Right. It's like the one thing he's bad at. Don't do that, man.
All right, let's pause for one more break to hear a word from our sponsor.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
What did you make of him talking about like his position? Seems like he doesn't want to really get too deep into the weeds on that yet.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's one area where it's like, all right, like especially with in terms of Simmons, like you're going to want to have that conversation with him. You're going to want to have that conversation with what he's comfortable with, where he's willing to grow, how much he's willing to have the ball, how much he's not going to have the ball. I wouldn't expect that kind of detail on an opening presser, for sure. I don't know.
He was talking about the Lakers and how big they are.
It's also like all of these sort of, yeah. yeah. He basically brought up, well, everybody tried to copy Golden State, and I think a lot of people made a mistake doing that. And
I'm not sure I agree with that.
I don't agree with that either. Like, the entire league shoots way more than they ever have. Like, everyone across 1 through 30 shoots more than it's not just the impact of Golden State. It's the impact of analytics and Houston and just people coming to realize how much benefit there is. I don't think too many teams are really copying Golden State as much as just where the league has gone. And Los Angeles is sort of like this outlier, because you have just two incredible talents in AD and LeBron. I would say trying to copy them, like the Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons pick and roll, that little snug pick and roll they like to do, that's not going to be LeBron and AD. No matter how much you work on it, no matter how much you try to use your size, you're not going to get those kind of results out of it. The Sixers have to be a little more creative than that. But
I do think watching these finals, and it's something that Doc also kind of alluded to, as good as LeBron and AD are, and as good as Miami has been, and we're recording basically right before Game 5, so this could be over by the time this hits your ears. The way Miami's played their kind of egalitarian style of basketball in the playoffs, yep, it's been very impressive. I do not see any super teams in these finals. Those teams have flaws, and
for sure,
I think for the Sixers, less the Sixers because they're far away, but for them and for every other team, they can at least look at these finals and say, okay, this isn't the Golden State juggernaut from 3 years ago where if they're healthy, the rest of us have no shot. That's all.
Yeah, for sure. The closest, the most complete team in the NBA this year is the one Doc coached.
Yeah. With his offense and his defense, like when you look up the regular season stats on that Clippers team, as much as they were going through the motions, it seemed like at times, pretty good, man. Top five, yeah, on both ends of the floor.
Yes.
They're good players. Who knew?
Yeah, I mean, it'll be, we'll see what all of this actually means. You know, I think it's also hard to, he said we're going to use our size to advantage. That's a different question than do we need to reshuffle the roster and get more shooting and ball handling and pick and roll play. Just because he's saying like right now, this is the roster, these are their strengths, play to their strengths, it doesn't mean he's not also saying behind closed doors, we need to change our strengths a little bit.
Sure.
So as much as like some of the we're big, use our size, be who you are, it might be like, oh man, we're going back to bully ball.
Yeah.
We'll see what they do when free agency gets here and the draft gets here and you can make all these transactions.
The Clippers Doc teams, if you're going to make me pick one skill that they've had the past 6 years, it is dribbling the ball.
Yes.
They've had a lot of ball handlers over those years. And I think he is a smart enough guy to look at this roster and say, okay, we're big, but we kind of need a little more of that, because that's A, how I operate, and B, how a lot of teams operate that are pretty good. So I think he's smart enough to figure that out.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, he can't come in here and talk about a different team. Like, he's talking about the team that he currently has. Any other major takeaways here?
No, not really. I mean, I think it'll be interesting to see what his staff looks like. Who of the Clippers guys can he take?
Yep.
Especially because Ty Lue, if he gets that job, you know, you would assume some of the Clippers coaches would be like, all right, yeah, I'll stay here. We're a pretty awesome team, you know.
Yep.
They're probably paid pretty well by Ballmer. And, you know, it'd be kind of a weird situation with Lue moving one seat over, but it's certainly happened before, something Lue has done before. Sam Cassell, I think the guy who ran their defense the past year was this guy Rex Kalamian. I don't know exactly how to say his name.
Sure.
He is the bald white guy on the bench next to him. But that's been an important position under Doc. Tibbs basically became Tibbs in Boston with Doc handing over the keys to him on that end of the court. So yeah, I'll be interested to see who of the Sixers staff, if anybody, will he keep?
Yep. Already lost Kevin Young. Yep.
Kevin Young's already gone. I wonder, you know, Ime Udoka seems like somebody who, you know, I don't know if he's any good, but he's certainly well thought of around the league. Might not be a bad guy to keep around.
Yep. No, I mean, like you said, it'll be interesting what happens with Lue. It'll be interesting what happens with Sam Cassell.
Sam Cassell, yeah.
I think he was interviewing for the Houston job. And I think that both of those could impact what of Doc's staff is willing to join him. You know, historically, Doc has brought some assistants with him when he changes. I think he brought like four or five guys from Boston to the Clippers initially. So you would expect there will be some over there. Armand Hill specifically, I think, has been 18 straight years.
He's been there forever.
With Doc. Yeah.
Those him sitting next to or behind him. I was always like, who is that guy? He's always been behind him. And then I looked it up this week. It is Armand Hill.
He's also a local. Well, not local. I think he grew up in, or he's originally from New York, but he went to college in Princeton, coached high school in New Jersey. So you'd expect he would be interested in coming over. Other than that, like you said, Ty Lue possibly getting the job could impact some of the availability. Rex Kalamian is probably the other one, but he doesn't have a huge history with Doc. He was only there for, I think, 2 years. And before then, he had kind of bounced around. He was with Toronto, OKC before that. He actually was with the Sixers once, way back in the Billy King era as a scout. So he has been well-traveled, but he's pretty well thought of defensively. So we will see how that shakes out. We will see how the front office shakes out. Not entirely sure if either of those are going to be resolved quickly. Like, I'm not sure if we're talking about a before the next podcast kind of time frame, but
my guess is the coaching staff will be resolved faster than the front office. Just a guess, but Doc did talk a little bit this week somewhere about, you know, I want to get my staff. I want to get that in place. That's the first thing.
Oh,
so,
sure.
I mean, some of it, like you said, it might depend on how fast Houston and the Clippers move. I imagine the Clippers will move pretty fast. Houston,
yep.
they might haggle on the contract for the coaches a little bit. So we have no idea how long that'll take.
Are you trying to say that Houston's cheap?
No, come on. Why would I say that?
Yeah, I think that pretty much covers it.
Yeah.
You know, we
got a draft in about a month. Start getting into that stuff.
Yeah, no shit. So weird. November draft. November 18th. That is coming up quickly. Sixers have the 21st pick, so there's actually some interest there.
Seems like we're officially moving towards kind of a calendar year type of season in the same calendar year.
Yeah.
Michelle Roberts, she had some interviews this week. I think she did one with both Shams and Sam Amick this week on The Athletic. $1. Go pick it up. Where I think she talked about how, you know, late January in 82 games are kind of what they are shooting for right now. So that'll be a little weird. Just because now the summers aren't off, but
oh, I'll be cranky as hell. Cranky as hell.
But you know what, though?
I like my summers, man. I like my summers.
I will, too. I'll say this, though. If we have a goddamn vaccine and stuff is, like, somewhat normal, I will not be cranky next summer and people are in the building while the Sixers
no.
are
Sure. I'm more thinking like 3 years down the road.
No,
like,
no, no. I'm saying 2 years I'll be cranky.
Right.
But next year I will, I'm like Charles Barkley praying in Space Jam when he lost his talent, like he'll never talk back again and stuff like that. I will not complain about losing our summer. But yeah, it'll just be, I think it'll be a little weird just because the NBA's off time, it kind of coincides with, you know, school being off and people taking vacations and things like that. That'll certainly be different, but if they're and I'm very curious to see what they do about the Olympics, I guess. They just won't let their guys play in it. That'll particularly be a bummer for Ben Simmons, I would say. I don't know what they'll do. Maybe they'll do a 3 week Olympic break like they used to do in hockey or something like that. But
yeah,
it's gonna be certainly pretty different next season.
Yep. Winter basketball is perfect for me because A, I hate the winter, and B, I like basketball. So I get to distract myself with how awful the cold is by having basketball to focus on. And in the summer, I get to, I get to enjoy my summer. I'm very much a fan of the way things work. The pandemic has changed everything about the world, so this would fit right in. I would love it if they reverted back to that over. But I
just don't know how they're going to do it unless they sacrifice some games at some point.
Yeah.
It would seem like something like, all right, let's do 72 games for 2 years and then maybe we can get it back to normal. But they don't seem that interested in that.
I wouldn't mind going to Vegas sometime other than fucking late July, though. That would be pretty cool.
Well, you're in luck.
Vegas in late July is not a whole lot of fun. I mean, it's still Vegas, but like it's 104 degree Vegas. Anyway, nobody really cares about us complaining about getting paid company vacations to Vegas. So we will probably,
it's a good time to
podcast.
Cut it off. Yeah.
Yeah, we're rambling here. Thank you, Rich, for jumping on, and we will talk to you soon.
See you, man.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.